Welcome back. Simon Zelikas and Sean Campbell. Simon in for Mitch Melnick. Sean in for Mitch Gallo. Dave Chattadoui on the board with you till 6 o'clock tonight. Habs Lunch Friday Scrum Edition goes between 6 and 7. Game night here on TSN 690. Habs versus Sharks. Dan Robertson and Sergio Momesso with the call.
Weber has made a huge difference back there, too, because not taking anything away from PK, but totally different player. One very, very offensive, great shot, and putting up the numbers and everything, but he wasn't really a physical presence back there. And I think I've seen a few hits that Shea's hit, put on some people, and now they're not roaming around in Montreal zone as much anymore.
Pierre Maguire on TSN 690, brought to you by Dagwoods Catering. Make your office party a hit with Dagwoods Catering. Order online at dagwoods.ca.
Pierre, good afternoon.
Hello, Simon. Hello, Sean.
What's going on? You all right, Pierre? Having a good day?
I'm having a great day.
Good stuff. That was Larry Robinson, who joined Chris Nyland on Off the Cuff earlier today. Pierre, they're just talking about Shea Weber and PK Subban. And, you know, when you want to change the dynamic of a team, when you eliminate and you swap number one defenseman, is that the most critical, like the biggest thing you can do from changing a DNA? Because if you were to change first-line center from first-line center, how much does your team change? But if you were to change number one defenseman, does that change that dynamic a lot more?
Change number one goalies could change the dynamic huge. Depending on who the number one center is, that could change the dynamic huge. But whenever you change top players at any position, it definitely can make a difference. It just depends on what you're looking for. I think Nashville wanted to get younger. I think they wanted to have a different vibe. Things hadn't worked out for their group the way they wanted to, so they wanted to change a little bit of the interior of their dressing room and the way they played on the ice. And for Montreal, it's very much the same. The one thing I would say, Larry's right about the physical dimension of Shea Weber. Absolutely, I couldn't agree more with what Larry was saying. The one thing I would say, for most people who don't watch a lot of Nashville, they're starting to heat up. Be careful. They're starting to find their way, and they're starting to find their identity.
So just that coming from Larry Robinson and the way that he played the game, talking about Shea Weber, he knows it's a different generation of hockey, but he knows that the Canadiens were probably missing that element, and that's why he kind of spoke of Shea that way.
There's no question about it, Sean. I would agree. And I remember when PK was drafted and Mitch Melnick asked me, what's he like? He said, well, he's a little bit like Larry Robinson and how he carries the puck. He's a little bit nasty, like the way Chelios used to play. He's got a little bit of the bite of Matthew Schneider. I mean, he's got a lot of what a lot of great Montreal Canadian players had, but he doesn't have one of those things that really stands out except for his ability to really rush the puck. Shea Weber has got a lot of the same characteristics to his game. The one thing he does have ahead of PK is he's much more consistent with his physical play.
And tonight the Canadiens will see Brett Burns, and you know he put up incredible numbers last year in the regular season and the postseason as well. When you look at Brett Burns, Pierre, what makes him special? What makes him different from the other elite defensemen in the league?
Well, first of all, he was drafted as a forward coming out of junior hockey. He played in the World Junior on a line with Jeff Carter and Ryan Getzlaff, and they were called the Goof Troop. And that was named by Brett Burns. So he was actually drafted as a forward, and it was Jacques Lemaire who transformed him from being a forward to a defenseman. So because of that, he's always had huge offensive skill, number one. Number two, might have one of the best release points for a defenseman in terms of shooting the puck with a snapshot in the league. His release point is phenomenal, and it doesn't take virtually any time at all for him to get it off. And for a big person, he can really skate. I mean, he can really, really skate. So you put it all together, you've got a really good player.
To make that transformation from forward to defenseman at the highest level, it's not just skating at that point, right? Right, Pierre? The hockey IQ for Brett Burns is got to be quite high, because it's not just physical. It's the mental aspect. You're just seeing the game so differently from the forward position and from the D spot.
Well, that's part of it, but I also think the coaching went into it. Mike Ramsey was an assistant coach there. Mike Ramsey was a tremendous defenseman in the NHL for a very long period of time, played on the 1980 U.S. Olympic team, first-round pick of the Buffalo Sabres, played on that Olympic team as an 18-year-old that won a gold medal in Lake Placid. Mike Ramsey's always been a tremendous, tremendous hockey person, and he and Jacques did a lot of really good work, along with Mario Tremblay, by the way, in Minnesota. Tremendous work. And Burns was one of the beneficiaries of having that tremendous work done from a great coaching staff, really, really good coaching staff. So you can have all the hockey IQ you want, but you got to have guys that can help refine you too. And that coaching staff in Minnesota did a great job with him.
So you mentioned his skating and his release point when he shoots, Pierre. So how do the Canadians game plan or try and counter what he can do on the ice tonight?
Well, first of all, dominate the puck. Don't let them play with the puck. San Jose is really good when they dominate the puck. Pittsburgh, what they did to beat San Jose last year is they just own the puck and they own the speed quotient of the game. So if you own the puck and you own the speed quotient of the game, it's really tough for San Jose to really implement a plan. And the other thing is you've got to get physical with their smaller forwards that are really gifted, and two of them are Joe Pavelski and Logan Couture. If you allow those guys to have a lot of free room and not pay a physical toll, that's problematic. So dominate the physical battles against those smaller forwards because they're really important to that team. Dominate the puck and dominate the speed quotient. If you do those three things, you're going to win.
Pierre, the Canadians have not won in San Jose in a very, very long time. I think the last time that they were there, the top pairing was Eric Weinrich and maybe Craig Rivé.
I think I was doing the games on the radio. I'm not kidding you. Back in the late 90s.
But
okay,
serious. It's clearly a graveyard, Pierre. And is there anything... Look, it's not their graveyard, right? Alex Galchenyuk is like, hey, man, when you were losing 5 years ago, I was playing in the Ontario Hockey League. I have nothing to do with this. But it is a graveyard. And if you can walk me maybe through a time where you were coaching and you guys would go somewhere, it was just the psyche wasn't there because it's just a place that your team couldn't thrive or excel in.
I remember Pittsburgh had the most difficult time winning in Philadelphia for years and years and years. And Bob Johnson came in and Scotty Bowman came in and then Barry Smith and I came in. And I'll never forget one of the meetings at the old Vista Hotel in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, before training camp, Bob Johnson saying, well, one of the things we're going to do is when we go to Pittsburgh or when we go to Philadelphia from Pittsburgh, we're not staying in the same hotel. So find us a different hotel, he said to the traveling secretary. So that's one of the things. And you know what? The name Pittsburgh went on huge runs of success in Philadelphia. And I'm not saying that's why, but it definitely played a role. There's no question, just for the psyche of the players. I think whenever you don't win, you got to look to change things up just in terms of game planning or where you stay or whether you go in there the day of the game or not. I'll give you another one from Scotty Bowman in Detroit. They used to play in San Jose or L.A. and then have to play in Colorado. That's how the schedule used to work back in the 90s for those Eastern teams that were in the Western Conference. So Scotty went to his player and said, you know what, rather than go in the night after the game because they'd play back-to-back, let's just go in the day of the game and see how that works out. And they started doing that with Colorado coming from California, and they started putting a beat down on Colorado. So, yeah, everybody's got their own little formula for how to change those things.
I know it's the West Coast for some of these teams, Pierre, but it's a simple question. Why is Joe Pavelski so underappreciated across the NHL?
Oh, my gosh. Think about it, Sean. His draft year, 2003, the best draft class ever, he was 205th in his draft class. It's not like he just became underappreciated now. He's always been underappreciated. Part of it is because he's not overly large. Part of it is because he's not overly fast. But I can tell you, I'll never forget, he only played 2 years at the University of Wisconsin. What I remember the most about Joe Pavelski, the first game I ever broadcast of his in the NHL, how much he shot the puck like Joe Sakic. And there are very few guys in this league that are that size that shoot the puck like Joe Sakic could, but Joe Pavelski's one of them. But you have to watch him all the time to appreciate how good he is, because he's not the guy that goes end to end. He's not the guy that dominates you physically. He's not the guy that's going to make the slick, oh boy, where did that come from kind of a play. He's just a guy that knows how to play. He just knows how to play, but you got to watch him a lot to understand that.
Sean mentioned Joe Pavelski, and I think, you know, last year Mark Scheifele had a fantastic season and probably the best kept secret in the NHL, no longer a secret. But Pierre, when you're covering these games, can you just tell me perhaps a player that guys like Campbell and I and Melnick, maybe we're not giving enough attention to, maybe like a quiet gem in the National Hockey League?
You mean for points or just players that are way under the radar that are really useful?
Let's go with the players under the radar that are very useful.
Derek McKenzie with the Florida Panthers, very useful player. Brandon Dubinsky, Carolina or Columbus Blue Jackets, very useful player. Victor Rask, Carolina Hurricanes, unbelievably useful player. Guy with points, I told this to Melnick a bunch of years ago, Cam Atkinson. In Columbus. I could pick out probably on every roster one of those players that doesn't get enough acclaim because everybody predicates everything on points.
They
but
do.
There are a lot of guys that can help you win based on what they're able to do. You just have to watch them a lot.
Watching the National Hockey League yesterday, Patrick Laine, Tarasenko, all these young players, Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel back to the lineup. It seems like we forgot about him. Pierre, if you can give me... maybe from years past, not too far past, but like, what's a great comparable for Jack Eichel?
Well, he's a hybrid. He's a bit different. I mean, because he's a bigger body who can really skate and he can squeeze the puck. I mean, he can really shoot it. I don't think Jack's the best playmaker, but I would say that Jack is one of those guys, when you get him the puck, he's going to know how to score with it. There's a little Teemu Selanne in there, but he's bigger than Teemu. He's a lot bigger than Teemu. But I would say that if I were to compare him to somebody in terms of skating, like Teemu could really skate and so can Jack, and shoot the puck, I would say that's probably the guy I'd probably compare him to.
Nice. I'm not sure if there's a comparable for this young man, but Pierre, I'm hoping you saw the highlights yesterday. Sidney Crosby scoring from in back of the net.
I watched the game. I didn't have to see the highlights. I watched the game.
But what didn't he show on that play, though? Like skill, coordination, you name it. Just an outstanding goal from an outstanding player.
The other night I did the Islanders and the Pittsburgh Penguin game, and I thought Crosby put in an MVP performance. I said it during the show. I said over the course of an 82-game schedule, there's always going to be, with an MVP-type player, situations you can look back during the season of 82 games and say, now I know why he's an MVP. Crosby did that in the Islander game in two different situations. One was a takeaway in the neutral zone from Tavares that eventually led to a goal, and another one was outmanning Travis Hamonic, who's a physical and very useful defenseman for the Islanders, eventually leading to a goal from Connor Sheary. Those were two of my standalones, but watching him last night against Dallas, that play, that is there's maybe in the history of the league that could do that, that composed, maybe 10 guys that could maybe have done that in the history of the league with that kind of composure.
Why is his goal scoring kind of shot up? He's always been able to score goals, but it seems it's kind of coincided last year when they changed over to Mike Sullivan.
I don't know. I mean, Mike deserves a lot of credit. I'm going to be hanging out with Mike tonight. I'm in Pittsburgh right now. They're celebrating our 91 and 92 Stanley Cup winning teams. So I'm in Pittsburgh tonight and tomorrow. So I'll see Mike and I'll ask him about it. But the one thing that I would say, and I do a lot of Pittsburgh games and watch a lot, Sean, of their games, is that Sidney's shooting the puck more and he's getting to more lethal scoring areas to shoot the puck. Now, I'm not being mean to his wingers, but Patrick Hornquist and Connor Sheary aren't exactly what you would call first-line wingers. They're good players. They're very good players. But they're not what you would call everyday first-line players. But in Pittsburgh, that's what they have, and that works well for them. And so I think Sidney's kind of taken it upon himself, Sean, to say, I'm not deferring to anybody else. I'm going to shoot the puck a lot more. And he is. He's shooting the puck a ton more.
Those two Stanley Cup championship teams, the 91-92 squad that you're celebrating this weekend, Pierre. How about this? Can you maybe give us a underappreciated player that never got enough play from that squad?
Oh, that is such a good question, and it's easy to do. I would say Phil Bork. I would say Troy Loney. I would say Randy Gillen. Randy Gillen in one faceoff game. Or one game against Boston, I think, won 15 straight faceoffs in the Eastern Conference semifinal. Joey Mullen, who's a Hall of Famer, so it's not fair to say underappreciated, but he was just so darn good for us. And a lot of the time, his goodness wasn't only on the ice. It's the way he got guys to react away from the ice. Just his decorum and his behavior and his polish and his intelligence. Phenomenal guy. I learned so much from Joey just being an assistant coach with that team. And but I would say our grinding guys, you know, whether it be Phil Bork or whether it be Troy Loney, those guys were really, really important for our teams.
Yeah, what's incredible, I have the stats here in front of me. Mario also, of course, in 23 games, 44 points. And right behind him, Mark Recchi, 24 games played, 34 points, with such a huge playoff.
Yeah, that's from the 91 team.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? The 92 team set a record. I don't even know if you guys are aware of it, that still stands to today. And I don't know if it will ever get beat. They won 11 straight games. The 92 Penguin team won 11 straight games to win the Stanley Cup. So they won four in a row against Boston, four in a row, obviously, against Chicago in the final. But they beat the Rangers three straight. So when you look at that, I don't know if that record will ever get broken. That's, you know, you're sweeping the Eastern Final, you're sweeping the Stanley Cup Final, and you're basically winning the last three games of the second round to win the Cup. That's off the charts.
Pierre, thanks for taking the time. Thoroughly enjoyed myself this weekend, and I would imagine Mitch will be back on Monday.
What did we say last week, Simon?
Something about a tub. And
you can't make the club if you sit in the tub. I said lay in the tub last week, but this week I'm going sit in the tub.
You know, it's funny because Gallo and I were driving ourselves nuts trying to remember what you said last week. We remember tub. We just couldn't forget the second part.
You can't make the club if you lay in the tub, but you can also say you can't make the club if you sit in the tub.
Absolutely. Hey, Pierre, thanks for taking the time. Much appreciated.